The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Well, on this week's program, we've got a cool show for you because we often talk about retirement issues, and sometimes we'll have a guest on about retirement. Today, we've got a little bit of different twist on retirement.
We're going to talk to Terrell Davis. He's a NFL Hall of Famer, and we're going to talk to Terrell about his transition in retirement.
What? So, he's no longer a running back for the Denver Broncos?
He would be one of the oldest running backs alive if he was with the Denver Broncos.
But you want to stick around for this, so stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
This is Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today, both myself and my co-host here. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people just like yourself during the week. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have some financial advisors you're working with today, or maybe you're just doing everything on your own, or you're just getting started, or you'd like a second opinion, we are glad you're with us and would love to participate in something that's going on in your life.
Yeah.
If you want to call in and be part of the program, I'd love to take your call, help answer some questions that you're dealing with. And frankly, it's so often, Pat, we see somebody come in and we think, oh, we see their situation. Someone sold them some product, the multiple-year surrender charge or something that's illiquid. They can't get out of it. And I think, had they just sought a second opinion, whether it's this radio program or a second opinion, they wouldn't have gotten this position.
Well, it's a difficult. It is for the average consumer, it is so hard to tell good from bad in our industry.
Oh, yep.
There's some areas that you could go to that you could do some background search on an investment advisor, but their recommendations may not be good. They might be great. So you should seek out a number of different opinions. And work with someone that's asking questions, that wants to know what your situation is before they start pitching a product.
My point here is if you'd like us to be your second opinion, we'd love to help you out.
On the air for
that's
free.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And you don't have to worry about us selling you something. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, that number is 1-888-242-6766, and would love to take your call and see what's happening in your financial life. And why don't we start things right off in Denver, Colorado with Will. Will, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Will.
So I have a question on behalf of my mother. She is a 74-year-old. She currently works full-time, and about 14 years ago, my father passed away, and she took his survivor Social Security benefit.
Okay.
At 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's not enough for her to be able to make ends meet, so she's having to work full-time,
okay,
which she has done for the last 14 years. So my question is this. Is there an avenue for her to speak with Social Security to see if they would reevaluate her circumstance in hopes of changing her benefits so that she could retire?
Well, so anytime after the age of 62, she was able to convert over to her own benefit.
Right.
And she can still convert up to her own benefit. Normally, you would do this, you would actually make this judgment at age 70. So at any point in time, did she go off of what's called survivor benefit into her own benefit on Social Security?
No, she is still on the quote-unquote survivor.
And how much is that?
You know, I don't have the specifics with me.
Did your dad have a higher wage job?
He did.
Okay.
Yes.
And did she stay home most of the years?
She was a stay-at-home until he passed away, and then she went to work full-time once he passed.
And how much does she make approximately?
Now she is probably making somewhere around $30,000 a year.
So what happens at for Social Security at retirement time when someone's widowed? The surviving individual receives the greater of either their own benefit or their spouse's benefit. So she's been on your dad's benefit, her husband's benefit, all these years. My guess is because he'd worked a whole career at a much higher wage, that survivor benefit is, my guess is, it's still worth more than what her benefit would be had she
converted over at age 70.
Having said that, it's something definitely to look into.
But that's the only other alternative she has. They're not going to reassess her situation
based on need.
Based on need.
Sure. Okay.
So she
just needs to go speak with Social Security.
Yes.
To find out which benefit would be more beneficial to her.
So, and say, look, I'm on a survivor's benefit. What would my own benefit be if I switched over?
In fact, they send a statement a couple times a year that she should have been.
Once a year, but they said they're going to stop doing that.
She can also go check it online. So, Will, let's talk about some other alternatives. Does she own a home?
Sure. Yes.
And what's the value of the home?
I would say right now it's probably a little over $500,000.
Okay. And does she owe anything on it?
She owes, I want to say, right around $100,000.
And have you looked at a reverse mortgage?
Well, I have spoken to her about that, but not knowing really how that works, she's afraid of doing that because she wants to have something to leave to my sister and I when she passes away.
Okay, so let's talk about you and your sister, right? How are you and your sister doing financially? If we said, can you guys both send Mom $750 a month, would you be able to do that?
That would be a stretch, right, but I'm sure we could do something. Yes.
Okay. So as long as you're both on the same page,
and has she thought about maybe downsizing a bit?
I think that she's getting to the point where now she's realizing that the house is maybe a little bit more than she wants to maintain.
Okay.
So that could be an option.
That would be my first thing to talk about with Mom is, look,
I know the real estate's appreciated a lot in Denver, but you know, if she quit working, she could probably move to an area that's not quite as expensive,
sure,
less upkeep.
Yeah, and a much smaller, but a lot less upkeep.
Yeah, that would be the first place I would go with Mom. She might be saying this. She doesn't want to. Does she work full time?
She does. Yeah.
Does she like work?
I think she's at a point where she would like to enjoy some retirement years.
Okay.
You know, where she's at.
I would check with Social Security Administration.
And also look at it. This is my mom. I'd be pushing hard for looking at a reverse mortgage.
If she wanted to stay in-house. You'd push harder for her to move.
Sure.
Does she live?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what.
A reverse mortgage, bear with me, but a reverse mortgage, she would use the equity.
Think of it this way.
Her home.
Think of it this way. Think about like if she refinanced her house with an interest only loan that she didn't have to make the payments. So it's $100,000. Next year it's $104,000. The following year it's $109,000 or whatever the number is. All right. So that continues to grow over time. But
when she passes away, any equity that she did not use left in the home goes to you and your sister. So she's not pledging that all to the bank. Essentially, what she's doing is she's spending the money while she's alive,
right,
versus you spending the money while she's dead. That's what it gets down to. That's what the reverse mortgage is.
Part of it is how much does she want to leave you to? Because there's $400,000. She's 74 and working full time because she didn't have enough income, but she's got $400,000 of equity in her house.
Would she be working full time if she had $400,000 in the bank?
I don't believe she would be, no.
Okay. So that is what a reverse mortgage does for. It's that simple. And we don't sell reverse mortgages. We don't have a dog in this fight. But I would go through a three-step process if it was my mother. I would say, actually, four steps. First thing I would do is go back and look at the Social Security. We don't think that's going to be favorable for you. We think that she's probably getting the highest benefit she's going to get. The second step I would look at is, hey, Mom, what do you think about moving to a smaller house? Easier to take care of, single story, age at home. Third thing I would look at is, hey, Mom, if you don't want to do that and you're going to stay at your house, how about my sister and I each send you $300 a month or $400 a month, whatever we can afford in order to actually, and then a reverse mortgage. And the third or fourth one, I don't know which order I would do that in. I know. But if it was my mom, I wouldn't have any problem in the world having a quitter job to do a reverse mortgage.
I have two family members that have reverse mortgages.
They're all basically the same flavor.
Same product.
The same product. They're FHA. They just changed October 1. The qualifier is harder to qualify. Your mother would still fall into that range. So they changed.
Just, yeah, go look at and see what's available.
Yeah.
At least that way you know what the options are there.
But I don't.
Okay.
No one specifically.
All right, Will.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck. It's nice you're helping out your mom, too. And there's a lot. I tell you, there's a. We're big fans of getting people's getting retirement with a home paid off. It just makes things a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I know it's tough when someone's older to want to move.
Yeah, and you've also you really want to question them. Oftentimes, people that work in their 70s will say they don't want to, but.
My mom and stepdad are both working full time.
It's hard
to
determine.
They're having a
ball. Yeah, but it's.
But 78.
It's hard to determine. Whether they, for some people, when as you're talking to them, whether they want to continue working or not, they might not like want to, people may in their mid 70s not want to work, but they're afraid of spending all that time alone or by themselves.
Or they've been there.
Yes. and they don't like
and
it.
And like, well, I got to go.
Given the alternative, getting up
well,
and
going
to
work. Well, I think part of it for some retirees, they don't know where else to.
Spend their day, social interaction. Yeah.
Social interaction, having some purpose, and all those other things. So anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON if you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We are with Bernie in Northern California. Bernie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Bernie.
Yeah, I was curious. Should I invest now or wait for a while? I'm kind of in a weird situation where I have to pay spouse on child support, which is like taking more than half of my income, and I barely have enough to, you know, make ends meet. But eventually I would like to be able to put some sort of a down payment on a house, you know, and I wasn't sure if maybe I should start putting a little bit away or maybe that's not a good idea.
Have you talked to Bernie, has it been more than 2 years since you've owned a home?
Yes.
Have you talked with anyone in the mortgage business about some programs out there that might work for you to buy a home?
No, I haven't.
Because if your calling is to say, should I start, does it make sense for me to try to save some money so I can get into a house? There's programs out there now. Heck, I heard an ad this week. It was a program, it was 1%.
It's
1%
like down. It's like 2005, 2006 all
I
over
know,
again.
I know, that's what it certainly feels like. It was like 1% down. I don't know the whole details of the loan they gave.
Yeah, so if you're looking to get into a home, you may not have to save a lot of money to get into a home. So it's worth having a discussion with a mortgage broker.
Yeah, and to see what you can afford. Because if you've got half your income or more going to spouse and child support,
you may not be able to afford a home. If minus that, does it make sense for you to start saving to get into a home? The answer is yes. If you can afford to put down away, I don't know, how much, $500 a month? Could you afford to save $500 a month?
No, not even that.
Okay. Do you have a company 401k right now available to you?
I do have a 457 plan.
You do? And are
yes.
You,
so you work for a municipality?
Yes.
Yeah.
And are you putting money into that?
No, I'm not putting any money into it. I actually transferred because I came from another company. And that money that I had from the other company, I transitioned that over into the 457. And so it's been in there for a while. And at this moment, they actually took out half of it to go to my ex.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So now, I'm not sure exactly how much is going to be left in there, but...
How much do you think is left?
I'd say maybe $1,000.
Okay. Well, that's not enough talking about... Yeah. So the answer to your question is, should you start saving for a home? Yes. How would I save for that? I'd save for it in the 457 plan. You could pull out $10,000.
It's got to go to an IRA.
It's got to go to an IRA.
It wouldn't get work for a 457.
It'd be too much work.
Well,
if the plan allowed it.
Yeah, and it's not like a 401k. They're different. The best thing to do is set up at your bank, set up a separate account, and have X dollars transferred every paycheck into a separate account.
Yeah, and next time, marry money.
I heard that, man.
So the check would be coming the other way.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, great advice there. Good financial advice there.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, Bernie, that's the place to do. Start there first, the mortgage land. And you know, the thing about saving, regardless of how challenging your financial situation is,
there's never a good time. It's hard. It's discipline. Were you going to say any of that?
No, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
It's hard. There's never a good time.
And if you've got that much outgoing, you might need a part-time job in the evenings or the weekends.
Yeah.
I mean, to make it through this season.
But him actually talking about it is pretty interesting, though. After a divorce and half his income's going away, he's thinking he's the guy that lives in the future.
Next time, marry a rich woman. So what is it you like about me? Primarily your balance sheet. My last thing didn't work out so well, and I'm having to pay. So I figure if this one doesn't work out, you'll be paying. That's what I like about you. Can we do this again next Friday? Is that what you're thinking, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a good proposition.
I actually was going to start. I'm going to start a website rather than Match.com called RichMatch.com.
He's really ugly old guys.
Where personality doesn't matter. That's our logo. That's our tagline.
Look at interest. There's just dollar signs.
RichMatch.com.
I don't know. I don't know how well that would do, Pat.
Well, my grandmother always used to tell me when I was younger it was just as easy to fall in love with a rich girl as it was a poor girl.
But you didn't follow her advice.
I did not, but I did fall in love with someone I love.
Well, there you go.
That
counts for something. Not everything, obviously, as we've heard from. Oh, I don't
rich
know.
RichMatch.com.
I think we're treading in some area that...
Well, it is a little humorous. If you take offense to this, then obviously you don't get the humor behind it. How who could take offense to this? We're being sarcastic.
Yes. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah, but I was in L.A. I was in Beverly Hills a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, Beverly Hills.
My son goes to UCLA. It's right next to it. And every time we drive down the street, I'd say to my wife, man, that looks really L.A. That looks L.A. with these guys driving around in these Mercedes, red Mercedes.
But Los Angeles, you can't just have a normal car, right?
Yeah, they're all souped up and they make noise.
They have a funny looking, the rims are different and they put little like fins on them, lowered or whatever, right? They're all blinged out.
Yeah. And I cut.
I grew up down that area. That's what I remember. Everything was blinged out.
I cut a guy off accidentally. And then he came up next to me and revved his big engine. And I think that was some sort of a sign or something. It was all animalistic to me. And I'm driving around with my daughter's Ford Edge.
That's the old Irishman driving around. You obviously weren't from that part of town.
No. I didn't even have sunglasses.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to business at hand here. Yes. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hans McLean. We want to run a question by us. Would love to chat with you. 1-888-242-6766. We're in Sacramento with Janine. Janine, you're with Hans McLean.
Yes, I had a question about the remainder after the exclusion on the sale of a personal residence. When I heard your show the other day, you said that the remainder was a capital gains, and I thought it was treated as ordinary income because a home is a personal asset.
No, personal assets are still subject to capital gain. So, for example, the sale of a primary home, if each individual can ask $250,000 to exclude from capital gain if they've lived in it, been their primary residence for three of the last five years, and $500,000.
I thought it was only two of the last five.
Is it two? Okay.
Two of the last 5 years.
Two of the last five.
And then $500,000 for married couples. Anything above that is treated as capital gain.
For federal income tax purposes.
Well, there's California, there's
no difference.
So for
I thought they were subject to ordinary tax rates, the remainder
yes, not for federal tax purposes.
Yeah. The state of California doesn't differentiate. And for the rest of the listeners, Janine is calling from California. That's how we knew the answer. For the state of California doesn't differentiate between capital gains rates and ordinary income tax rates. They're one.
Do you have
same.
More than that in gain on your house?
No, it's just when you said that, I was just curious because I like to learn things.
Oh,
and so in my mind, that the capital assets are usually capped at a certain amount. I thought
I'm not even quite sure what that means.
Well, there are things that qualify for capital gains treatment.
And yeah, capital
assets like stocks and things like that. But
yeah,
personal
real property.
Residence, to my knowledge, is a personal asset, the same as your personal car. So when you sell your personal car, if you're honest and you report any gain you had, that it's subject to ordinary income rates because a personal car and a personal residence don't qualify.
Well, now, so there's collectibles. The only kind of car you're going to get that are going to appreciate most likely is a collectible. And there we have to, it's a different rate on collectibles.
Okay, so.
Not ordinary income.
Not the investment. No, just your ordinary regular car that you're selling. I just think of a personal asset.
Okay.
Things that are personal assets. And so I just wanted, if I were wrong, I wanted to make sure that I knew what was correct.
Glad you called, Janine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, have a great day.
My call.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
That was nice of you to say that she wasn't wrong.
The collectibles are at 25%, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's a different rate for collectibles.
There was. I'm not sure if there is today.
I've never been a collectibles guy.
Yeah.
So,
there was at one point in time. I remember years ago when I researched it, but things have changed so many times. And speaking of, right? Speaking of change, tax rate changes, bill changes, changes.
Whole,
until it's written into law, nothing has changed.
With what?
Any of these proposals.
Oh, gosh. I don't pay attention to the tax. I honestly don't.
Yeah. Until it's written into law.
What's the point? I don't even read the articles.
I used to.
I did, too. Early on in the administration, earlier in the year, would there be something come out, proposed tax changes. I've kind of paid attention to it, realized, and even then, it was subject to a lot of changes. Now, so considering it doesn't seem like the administration can get anything through Congress.
And the reason I bring this up, I read this study the other day where they had a quote that in 2010, remember there was that gap in 2010s where there was no estate taxes? It was that one year period that if you happen to die in that particular year.
And then suddenly they triggered back in 2011.
In 2011, right?
Was there a spike in suicides amongst wealthy people? It might not have been if they were on the richmatch.com.
richmatch.com.
But have avoided that.
Our website, richmatch.com.
And they could have transferred unlimited transfer to spouse, too.
So
to avoid the capital gains.
When there was no estate tax in that year, the IRS said that there was a 37% drop in bequest for charities in that year.
This is based on
people not actually giving money out of their estate to charities because there was no estate tax.
There's no question. There'd be no question that.
So when
you eliminate eliminate some tax favors for charitable giving, whether it's the current deduction from ordinary income, like the average person can take, or someone who itemizes anyway, or through estate tax, because we're allowed to pass on a single individual about $5.5 million, a married couple about $11 million before they're subject to estate tax.
And if you got rid of that,
you give it to charity, it's unlimited. You're Bill Gates, and you want to give away all but $11 million.
Then
there's no his.
But
no
if you get
tax.
Rid of that. If you get rid of that, if it was all of taxable, if it all could go on to the next generation,
if tax law changed subject so that a taxpayer would no longer receive a deduction,
people would not give as much.
Yeah.
So my point being is this: the reason I actually don't pay too much attention to the proposals,
and that
is because at the end of the day, it's the minutia in the proposals that actually drive behavior. It's the minutiae in the behaviors.
That's why people complain about the tax code. Because there's always these unintended consequences.
Yes. Like,
you push here, this pops up there.
Yeah. And it's a form of social engineering. Why we get a mortgage deduction is beyond me.
Well, you know why. To encourage home ownership.
Yeah, but home ownership.
Because the banks lobbied pretty good about keeping that.
But home ownership, despite it being the American dream, has not always been the best thing for the individual or America as a whole.
And I would say it's maybe not even the American dream.
What is the American dream, Scott?
Being able to chart your own course. Not being subject to the marketers that are pushing mortgage products and homes. That's saying that the American dream is owning a home with a picket fence.
Excellent point.
I don't think that is necessarily the American dream.
So the point...
The American dream is your father was a cobbler, his father was a cobbler, his father was a cobbler, and you're here and you can be whatever you want to be. That is the American dream.
Yeah, even
that's
if it's
the beauty.
A cobbler.
So even, you know what's exciting about this country and this time, even if you're approaching retirement stage, it is such a new, fresh time to be alive and there's so many opportunities.
And access to education is easier than ever.
With the internet, we've got all kinds of phenomenal websites where you can
free schools,
find people to connect
free,
with.
Free college educations at any age. At any age.
So the American dream is alive and well.
My point back to the tax rates are don't spend too much time following all these tax proposals because when it comes out of the sausage-making machine, it's going to look
different.
a lot different.
It will be different. We're going to take a quick break. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of the show. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
Thanks for sticking with us on this fantastic day. Hey, real quick, we've got some workshops coming up. If you're getting close to retirement time.
If you're within, let's say, 5 years of retirement.
Yeah.
Or if you just retired and you don't feel properly prepared for retirement. Oftentimes people will come to these workshops having retired 6 months or 12 months or 18 months ago. We're doing a special series of workshop called the 7 Personal Decision Points. We spend a lot of time on these 7 personal decision points talking about retirement income planning.
Yep, different strategies behind that.
You know, where does the money come from? Will I have enough? Will it last the rest of my life?
How much money do I need?
The whole series of questions that you asked regarding retirement income planning are addressed in the 7 personal decision points.
And we're having these throughout Northern California, Sacramento, and the Bay Area the week of October 16th. So coming up here soon, the week of October 16th, and in the Denver region, the week of October 22nd. 75 minutes long, pretty entertaining, but you didn't need reservations. So visit HansonMcClain.com to get registered and for more information. Again, HansonMcClain.com. And some high percentage of people told us how valuable it was.
What? Yeah.
99%.
It was a lot.
It was a high enough that I should remember, but I don't. But it's a good workshop, so you need to come.
You'll like it. You'll like it. We'll cover 7 personal decision points and the retirement income planning.
If you'd like to be part of the program today, you want to join Hanson McClain, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's start off here in the Bay Area talking with Jesse. Jesse, you're with Hanson McClain.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Jesse.
I just was curious because we're getting ready to sell a piece of property and we're going to have some major capital gains on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been studying some information regarding the 453, Section 453, which is the monetized tax treatment of your sale. So in lieu of that paying capital gains, this is supposed to be a way to defer it for 30 years. Now, I just wanted to check, is that Section 453, is that legitimate? Is it just something that we're dreaming about?
Where did you hear? So Pat and I are both looking at each other. When you first said Section 453, we thought you must spoke and meant Section 457. Thinking, I'm not familiar with Section 453. And you're telling me it's a section that enables you to defer taxes for 30 years.
Yeah, capital gains. Yeah.
And how does it allow you to defer capital gains for 30 years?
Well, they treat it like a Section 1031. You're familiar with that.
Yes.
Right? Where you defer by doing exchanging. You have to incorporate a fiduciary to take the monies,
mm-hmm.
receive the monies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they set that up for you. This is why I was calling you up.
Got it.
I wanted to see if you folks were haven't heard of it. And it's called monetized treatment of your money. capital gains. So I was just wondering, you know, in lieu of them, you know, they have to set it up to a fiduciary so mm-hmm. you can get the money.
Yeah, you do then a 1030. They do a tax-free exchange into it, correct?
Right, it's a tax-free. Yeah, but it's into like an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're the ones that are taking the monies, and then they pay it back to you in the form of a loan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an installment sale treatment. So you monetize installment sale.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen lots of stuff in my 25 years.
So tell me what you think about it, Jesse.
Well, to me, that would be a wonderful, wonderful thing, because if you can defer it for 30 mm-hmm. years, you know, and you can have that money, because the money you're paying 35% in capital gains, right?
Well, state and federal.
Right. Is that state, federal?
So we're not talking about an installment sale.
It's not an installment sale.
Here's where you exchange it.
Yeah. So what they've done is they've kind of taken the 453, which is the installment sale, and they introduced a fiduciary into this process and installed some sort of an annuity or life insurance contract, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, Jesse.
Yes.
I'm very familiar with an installment sale. Done some installment sales, right? Understand them. In an installment sale, you carry some of the paper, and then it's a portion is a return of principal, a portion is a return that you paid capital gains tax, and a portion is some of the interest on the note that you carry over a period of time, and you pay taxes as the dollars come in.
As they come in. So if you amortize it over 30 years...
Then you pay for it all there.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that the whole tax obligation is deferred for 30 years. And in this, what you scares the most out of me is that you have to, you use the word a fiduciary.
Which sounds like someone was pitching.
Right. And you use the word insurance or annuity or life insurance. Did you use all those words?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I wouldn't touch this with my worst enemy's money.
Well, you know, I've seen it implemented and used, and it seems to be working. That's
who? Well, how do you know that it's worked?
Well, we don't know, do we?
Yeah, it hasn't been 30 years.
So here's what I would, if I were in your situation doing due diligence, and by the way, there's a number of ways you can look at structuring a transaction. You're in the Bay Area, looking at the notes here, Santa Clara, right? The amount of appreciation you've had in the last 2 years is worth more than you're going to be paying in taxes. So what I've also, before you try something too esoteric, so if I were in your situation looking at things, what you want to make sure is that something has been tested in tax court. There's a private letter ruling. It only applies to that particular individual. You want to make sure something's tested, unless you want to spend much of your years fighting the IRS. Right? Because there's lots of those stories out there, and there's a lot of creative people out there. Creative tax attorneys will come up with some strategies and say, hey, if we do that this way, we'll be able to make it such that we'll be able to avoid the taxes. And then what do you know, 3 years down the road, 8 years down the road, they end up in tax court and lose. And that's how you get these laws named after individuals. So I would do a whole boatload of due diligence. There's also some things you could be looking at, some other ways to structure this. But the last real estate cycle, we at the top of the market, we saw lots of crazy things out there.
The tenants in common was the popular
one. We told people, look,
you,
what you're going to pay in fees is going to be equal to what you pay in taxes.
So let's step back for a second. How much of gain do you have on this? And this is a non-residential property, correct?
That's correct. It's always been a rental.
Okay, and how much gain do you have on it?
After reducing my depreciation, my the basis and the improvements, probably about $800,000 to $900,000.
Yeah. So,
what's the rental worth?
I'd say about 1.2.
Okay. So you
much did you pay for this property?
200.
145 plus improvements, which is about 60 grand.
So then
you have the depreciation, right?
Yeah. So you've got an $800,000 or $900,000 gain, right? You have an $800,000 or $900,000 gain.
What could you have sold this house for a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Not a million. Probably like about $800,000 to $900,000.
There you go. So, this $800,000 to $900,000 gain, although it is a lot to you, in the world of taxes and capital gain, realizing capital gains is not a big number. I know of no one who has used this technique in order to shield themselves from capital gains. I would happily take my gains and run.
If I had a house that I can get $1.2 million today that a year ago I couldn't even get a million, I'd say, beautiful. The increase in market value just paid my tax bill.
So and I'd laugh Jesse, all the way to the don't bank. Make this thing any more complicated, and certainly don't turn over this asset to a third party where you are giving up control. Even us as fiduciaries, we only can direct the dollars.
30 years? Can you imagine having someone of 30-year control?
Yeah, you just don't want to do it. There's too many risk. So,
our opinion. Yeah, Jesse.
And we actually feel fairly strong about it. So.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
We've seen so many weird things over the years. Haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a new one, though. This is a new shake on it.
It is. One thing is for sure, I'm going to do a little more research after this. Just because I'm sure we'll have
another.
We'll see it again.
We'll see it again. Yeah. We most certainly will.
To be part of Hanson McLean, call 1-888-2-HANSON, and we'd love to take your call. And now we're going to talk with Mike. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
I have a question about a home that's in a trust. The trust was started about 6 years ago when my mother-in-law had passed.
What kind of trust is it in?
It's a family trust.
Okay.
So what has happened is that in her passing, the property had was left in the trust, and it was issued a federal tax ID number, and it's been maintained for the last about 6 years. My concern is there a tax liability had this been sold 6 years ago versus the amount that it's appreciated now? Is there a tax liability upon the dispersal of this or the selling of this home now?
If there's a gain over that period of time and there's a sale, it would be subject to a capital gain. Yes. And if there is a loss, you could get it would be subject to capital loss.
How many beneficiaries of the trust are there?
Two.
And who are they?
The children of my mother-in-law.
Okay. And so why did they decide to keep the asset together? Is one of them living in the home or?
No, they were going to use it as a rental.
Okay.
Actually what they were going to do, but it's been rented and it's been vacant. It's been rented and vacant. And there's really been no income from it, no appreciable income. But it's been maintained and now it's appreciated probably a couple $100,000.
Yep. Yep. So you didn't either help or hurt yourself by keeping it in the trust.
It could have hurt if it had some years with some decent income.
Because trust
paid the maximum tax rates really quickly.
But in this situation, they didn't.
Probably not, yeah.
So there's really no benefit of keeping it in the trust. I wouldn't have kept it in the trust if there were just two of them, two beneficiaries. I would have just kicked it out into a title to joint.
But then you have to, then it's another challenge. Now you've got to joint asset with somebody.
Well, I was going to say that.
You would have sold it.
I would have sold my interest in it. Or bought out the other person.
Yeah.
Only because I have no desire to be in business with any of my siblings. I love them dearly, but they're just not nearly as bright as I am. I'm joking.
Okay.
I'm joking.
There would be there'd definitely be a capital gain, Mike.
There will be a capital gain, but you didn't hurt or help yourself.
Okay.
I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks. Glad you called.
So the interesting thing about that caller was that when you inherited an asset from your mother or father, brother or sister, psychologically, you have to bring it back to the fact that it's just an asset. And in most situations, you should not continue to own a rental home or a home with a sibling. It leads to so many complexities. Normally, siblings are different financial places in their life.
An asset, it's always a great time to say, would I buy this today?
And would I buy this with my brother or sister? Would I put money in?
Yeah.
And so it's a great time to question whether it's a good time to get rid of that asset, regardless of where it came from.
Looking at the call, we've got a really pretty cool interview coming up right now. And many of you may know this gentleman, Terrell Davis. You're thinking, well, Terrell Davis, isn't he the football player? Yes, Football Hall of Famer and former Denver Broncos running back. And Terrell, of course, is a retiree from the NFL.
Oh, yep. An incredible player. Great story about him. I saw his speech for when he was accepted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and it was inspiring to me. It was inspiring to me, and I know I shared it with you, Scott, and we had a discussion. We said, you know, we've got to get him on as a guest. We need to hear more of his story.
Yeah.
So, Terrell Davis, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we get into it, the reason I asked you to be on the show is not so much about your football career, because everyone knows about your football career. Anyone that follows football at all knows what a spectacular player you were. Can you tell us a little bit about how it wound down for you when you knew your football career was coming to an end? And you have many, many friends that played for the NFL that went through a career transition. Could you share with us a little bit what your thinking was and what your thought process and what you're doing today?
Yeah, you know, I was playing, and, you know, I came in as a later round draft pick. So from day one, I kind of figured that, you know, football wasn't quite in my future, to be honest with you, because I was kind of hoping it would be, but not knowing. You know, when you're a late round pick or a guy that's not supposed to be drafted, you kind of have to think about plan B. And for me, plan B was, you know, I was going to go back to school and stay in Atlanta to finish up, you know, or to try to do something like with Coca-Cola, because that's kind of the company that a lot of guys from the University of Georgia seems to work for.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of plan B, was just doing something like that, you know, just kind of figuring it out. But then football got in the way, and it provided, you know, kind of a different path for me in terms of financial. But I always saw football as not necessarily a career, because it's not long enough to be a career. It's a place for, where I look at it is, you try to make it last as long as it could last. You try to build up a financial piggy bank. And you think about the next thing in life. And I thought about this as a very, you know, at a young age, but I didn't have a specific game plan in mind. I knew there was something that I had to do. I had things that I thought I wanted to do, but there was nothing that was actually laid out for me. So I got into the league. I played my first 4 years. Everything was great. No injuries. You know, got a new contract and had a lot of success. Well, year five comes around, and I tear my ACL in the fourth game of the year, my fifth year. And so then the reality hit is that, wait a minute, you know, you kind of forget that you're really one play away from your career ending.
So, Terrell, that injury happened in your fifth year. So 7 years in total, but the injury is in the fifth year. You're thinking this could end. This could end at any second. This could end at any play, right? So
yeah. So
for a number of years, you're out there on the gridiron, shoulder to shoulder on the football field, and you're thinking, what's my next move?
So, yeah, so I'm thinking about it, but there's challenges with that. I mean, number one is, okay, I don't have a degree in real estate. I didn't have any experience in real estate, so you want to do it, but then there's the challenges of how do I get into real estate. We all think because we've had success on the football field, that translates into I'm gonna have success, you know, away from football. And so some of the principles we use, and the desire and the hunger and being a champion, and we think, okay, we were successful in this, so now I can just take that and use the same mentality and effort, and I can do the same thing off the field. And you know, for some guys it works, and for a lot of guys it doesn't work, because it's not a field that we've actually had experience in. And then you have to trust a lot of other people around you to help make that happen.
Yes.
And so that's one of the challenges of doing something like that.
Terrell, and desire is not enough, because I could have every desire and motivation and train all day long, every day, to become a professional athlete. And if you'd ever met me, you'd realize it didn't matter if there were 48 hours in a day. I'm never going to get there.
Right.
Right. So you have to have aptitude and attitude.
Right.
So, unfortunately, you have both. But it is absolutely true is that there are certain things that people have aptitude for. So when people say they're retiring from the NFL, of your friends that have played professional sports, how many actually really retire And how many actually just go through a career transition? And oftentimes, I'm sure you have these conversations with people where they get up and they go, I don't know what I'm going to do next, right?
Yeah, the transition is the key word. Struggling is another word that a lot of guys experience because there is no handbook. There is nothing that we have that we can take for the most part. Football is different. Sports are different. It's like a cocoon. It's kind of you've got friends. You've got people who are the same age, a lot of guys who think the same, and it's this fraternity. And sometimes they struggle with the social aspect as well as the other aspect of it. But, yeah, there's not a lot of guys who say they're retired from anything, and they're just sitting around just, you know, vacationing all week. No, we all have to find another way to make a living.
Or purpose, right? So even if you had enough money to retire, it's purpose. So you know what's interesting? What you just said about this cocoon, when we spend time talking with our clients, especially the further up you are in a hierarchy, the harder the transition is because of the cocoon. Right? The minute you know you leave that football field and you take the uniform off, and you're recognized in public, that's one adulation that I don't care who you are. Everyone likes that, right? But as time goes on, the adulations begin to slow until you just become a regular guy. And you are one of the few people that realize my skills on the football field are not necessarily transferable into something else. The same thing happens with a retiree, which is, if you're managing a group of people or a company, you have a couple things going for you. You've got a social group, which you probably miss no longer playing with Denver, the Broncos, and no longer living in Colorado, right? You're living in California now, so you miss the social aspect. You miss the challenge, right? You miss the kind of hard knocks days, right, where you get to go and try out and show the rookies who you are, I'm guessing. And you miss the control over your environment. And these are the same things that most retirees go through, right? And the biggest one is the social aspect and the common purpose, the goal. When you're on a football team, the beautiful thing about football is that everyone on the team has a common purpose and goal, and you're willing to, you know, to do whatever you need to do, including end your career for it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, It is. It's an interesting dynamic when you think about it, and I think part of it too is like when I was playing for the Broncos, everything we did was kind of on a schedule. So you know, I didn't really have to be if you don't have to be a friendly person at all. You don't have to socialize with anybody. All you have to do is go to work, do your job, and life is great. You know, you know what time you have to be at the meetings. You know what time you have to be at the plane. They're going to fly you to the game. Everything is taken care of for you when you're an athlete. And if you play well, you get paid, and that's your life. Well, when you leave and go to the real world, no one's knocking on your door telling you have to get up at 8 in the morning. No one's saying, hey, man, you know, you got to go fly to this place. It's all on you now. And, yeah, the further you get away from playing, it is it's challenging that people – you know, they don't recognize you as much as they used to because now you're just that old, you're the old guy now.
So what's next? You are now a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Did you ever imagine growing up? Ever once imagine growing up?
Nope.
And how exciting for your coaches that coached you along the way. It's all those people that you interacted with along the way. How exciting for them and you?
It's incredible. And they're all excited. And we always talk. I talk to my Pop Warner coaches. I spoke to my college coach. And I asked them the question. I said, did you see this coming? And, you know, some coaches might be like, yeah, I saw it coming. I'm like, you didn't see this coming. I didn't even see this coming. So how you going to say you saw this coming? So it's strange when you look back on your life and you start looking at moments where you had no idea what path you were on. And where that path would lead you. And I just look back and I'm like, I can't believe the kid from San Diego that, you know, grew up. I love football growing up, but, you know, I went to a high school when I played nose guard. I played fullback. I go to a college where they canceled the football program. And we just, you know, we just can't believe, like, again, they canceled the football program after my second year there. And there was a moment where I really thought I wasn't going to play football anymore because I didn't do much at Long Beach State.
Mm-hmm.
I'd played it 5 games, and they gave me the option of staying in school and just and staying on full scholarship. And it wasn't like other schools were clamoring to have me at the time because we were like one of the worst schools in the country in terms of football program. I wasn't wasn't looking to be recruited anywhere. So it's just moments like that I look back on my life and I just laugh, man.
Oh, well, I got to tell you, so the success is yours and the success is those people that have helped you through the process. And I'm happy for you. I truly am happy for you. I'm looking forward to you're going to speak at our event in Denver, which thank you for doing that. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this career transition because that is, while we manage billions of dollars and we understand money, what we find is the clients struggle with the most is how do I move either from one career to the next? And much like football players or any pro athletes, some 60% of people's retirements take place outside of their own will, meaning that take place because of injury or change in situations of which they have no control over. In the program's called Conquering the New Retirement, and we're looking forward to your input, and congratulations on that Pro Football Hall of Fame induction. Amazing. And you had mentioned earlier where everyone had said around you, oh, yeah, we expected this. Remember the old saying that my grandfather used to tell me is that success has 1,000 fathers and failure is an orphan. So if it hadn't worked out, they'd be saying,
they wouldn't be claiming that, right?
That is exactly it, right? That is exactly it. I thank you. I'll let you go. We're looking forward to seeing you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you very
right.
much.
Thanks, Terrell.
Appreciate
Bye.
It.
And if you're sitting there and you're thinking, wait a minute, this is an event in Denver. We're not going to be able to participate. We apologize for not being able to participate. But we've got some other opportunities in Northern California because the following week, the week of October 16th, is our 7 Personal Decision Points Retirement Workshop. So,
and we're going to talk a lot about retirement income planning during this workshop.
Yeah. So in the Bay Area, we've got October the 18th in San Jose. It's a Wednesday. October 19th, a Thursday in Pleasanton. And October 21st, a Saturday in Concord. And in the Sacramento area, we've got Carmichael on the 18th, Rancho Cordova on the 19th, and Sacramento on the 21st. To register and to get all the details and everything, you're going to want to go to HansonMcLean.com. You do need to have tickets. Matter of fact, one of our last workshops filled up. We had to turn people away. So it's been great having you with us. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.